for early evening, and the wary Veilmen walked in uneasy silence through the shrouded gloom of the forest night, the moon a distant beacon that appeared only at brief intervals through the dark boughs overhead. Flick was particularly disturbed by the unnatural silence of the Dulm, a silence strange to this huge forest, but uncomfortably familiar to the stocky Veilmen. Occasionally they would pause in the darkness, listening to the deep stillness. Then, hearing nothing, they would quickly resume the tiring march, searching for a break in the forest ahead that would open onto the highlands beyond. Flick hated the oppressive silence, and once began whistling softly to himself, but was quickly stilled by a warning motion from Shay. Sometime during the early hours of the morning, the brothers reached the edge of the Dulm, and broke through into the shrub-covered grasslands that stretched beyond for miles to the highlands of Lee. The morning sun was still several hours away, so the travelers continued their journey eastward. Both felt immensely relieved to be free of the Dulm, away from the stifling closeness of its monstrous trees, and from the unpleasant silence. They may have been safer within the concealing shadows of the forest, but they felt considerably better equipped to deal with any danger that threatened them on the open grasslands. They even began to speak again in low voices as they walked. About an hour before daybreak, they reached a small, brush-covered vale where they stopped to eat and rest. They were already able to see the dimly lighted highlands of Lee to the east, a journey of yet another day. Shay estimated that if they started walking again at sundown, they could easily reach their destination before another sunrise. Then, everything would depend on Menyon Lee. With this unspoken thought in mind, he quickly fell asleep. Only minutes passed, and they were awake again. It was not something moving that caused them to rise in sudden apprehension, but a deathly quiet that settled ominously over the grasslands. Immediately they sensed the unmistakable presence of another being. The feeling struck them at the same instant, and both came to their feet with a start, without a word, their drawn daggers gleaming in the faint light as they looked cautiously about their small cover. Nothing moved. Shay motioned his brother to follow as he crawled up the shrub-covered slope of the little vale to where they could view the land beyond. They lay motionless in the brush, peering into the early morning gloom, eyes straining to detect what lurked beyond. They did not question the fact that something was out there. There was no need. Both had known the feeling before the window of their bedroom. Now they waited, scarcely daring to breathe, wondering if the creature had found them at last, praying they had been careful enough to conceal their movements. It seemed impossible that they could be found now after their hard struggle to escape. Wrong that death should come when the safety of Lee was only a few hours away. Then with a sudden rush of wind and leaves, the black shape of the skull-bearer rose soundlessly from a long line of scrub trees far to their left. Its dim bulk seemed to rise and hang heavily above the earth for several long moments, as if unable to move, silhouetted against the faint light of an approaching dawn. The brothers lay flat against the edge of the rise, as silent as the brush about them, waiting for the creature to move. How it had tracked them this far, if indeed it had, they could only guess. Perhaps it was only blind luck that had brought them all together in this single, empty piece of grassland, but the fact remained that the Veil Men were hunted creatures, and their death had become a very real possibility. The creature hung motionless against the sky a moment longer. Then slowly, sluggishly, the great wings reaching outward, it began to move toward their place of concealment. Flick gave an audible gasp of dismay and sank farther back into the surrounding brush, his face ashen in the gray light, his hand gripping Shay's slim arm. But before reaching them, while still several hundred feet away, the creature dropped into a small grove of trees and was momentarily lost from sight. The brothers peered desperately in the hazy light, unable to see their pursuer. "Now," Shay's determined voice whispered urgently in his brother's ear, "while the creature can't see us, make for that line of brush ahead." Flick did not need to be told twice. Once the black monster finished with the trees that now occupied its attention, the next stop would be their hiding place. The Veilman scampered fearfully from his place of concealment, half running, half crawling along the wet morning grass, his tousled head jerking in quick glimpses over his shoulder, expecting the skull-bearer to rise any moment from the grove and spy him. Behind him ran Shay, his lithe body bent close to the ground as he darted across the open grassland, zigzagging his way silently behind his brother's stocky figure. They reached the brush without mishap, and then Shay remembered they had forgotten their packs. The packs that now lay at the bottom of the vale they had just left. The creature could not miss seeing them, and when it did, the chase would be over and there would be no more guessing which way they had gone. Shay felt his stomach sink. How could they have been so stupid? He grabbed Flick's shoulder in desperation, but his brother had also realized their error and slumped heavily to the ground. Shay knew he had to go back for the telltale packs, even if he were seen. There was no other choice. But even as he rose hesitantly, the black shape of the hunter appeared, hanging motionless in the brightening sky. The chance was gone. Once again, they were saved by the coming of dawn. As the skull-bearer poised silently above the grasslands, the golden rim of the morning sun broke from its resting place in the eastern hills and sent its first emissaries of the approaching day shooting forth to light the land and sky in their warm glow. The sunlight broke over the dark bulk of the night creature, and seeing that its time was gone, it rose abruptly into the sky, wheeling about the land in great, widening circles. It screamed its death-like cry with chilling hatred, freezing for one quick moment all the gentle sounds of morning. Then turning north, it flew swiftly from sight. A moment later it was gone, and two grateful, unbelieving Veilmen were left staring mutely into the distant, empty morning sky. Chapter 5. By late afternoon of that same day, the Veilmen had reached the highland city of Lee. The stone and mortar walls that bounded the city were a welcome haven to the weary travelers, even though the bright afternoon sun made their hot, dull gray mass appear as unfriendly as low-heated iron. The very size and bulk of the walls were repugnant to the Veilmen, who preferred the freedom of the more pregnable forest lands surrounding their own home. But exhaustion quickly pushed any dislikes aside, and they passed without hesitating through the west gates and into the narrow streets of the city. It was a busy hour, with people pushing and shoving their way past the small shops and markets that lined the entryway to the walled city and ran inward toward Menion's home, a stately old mansion screened by trees and hedges that bordered carefully manicured lawns and fragrant gardens. Lee appeared to be a great metropolis to the men of Shady Vale, though it was in fact comparatively small when one considered the size of the great cities of the deep Southland or even the border city of Tirsis. Lee was a city set apart from the rest of the world, and travelers passed through its gates only infrequently. It was self-contained, existing primarily to serve the needs of its own people. The monarchy that governed the land was the oldest in the Southland. It was the only law that its subjects knew, perhaps the only one they needed. Shay had never been convinced of this, though the Highland people for the most part were content with the government and the way of life it provided. As the Veilmen maneuvered their way through the crowds, Shay found himself reflecting on his improbable friendship with Menion Lee. It would have to be termed improbable, he mused, because on the surface they seemed to have so little in common. Veilman and Highlander, with backgrounds so completely dissimilar as to defy any meaningful comparison. Shay, the adopted son of an innkeeper, hard-headed, pragmatic, and raised in the tradition of the working man. Minion, the only son of the royal house of Lee and heir to the throne, born into a life filled with responsibilities he pointedly ignored, possessed of a brash self-confidence that he tried to conceal with only moderate success, and blessed with an uncanny hunter's instinct that merited grudging respect even from so severe a critic as Flick. Their political philosophies were as unlike as their backgrounds. Shay was staunchly conservative, an advocate of the old ways, while Menyon was convinced that the old ways had proved ineffective in dealing with the problems of the races. Yet for all their differences, they had formed a friendship that evidenced mutual respect. Menyon found his small friend to be anachronistic in his thinking at times, but he admired his conviction and determination. The Veilman, contrary to Flick's oft-expressed opinion, was not blinded to Menyon's shortcomings, but he saw in the Prince of Lee something others were inclined to overlook. A strong, compelling sense of right and wrong. At the present time, Menyon Lee was pursuing life without any particular concern for the future. He traveled a good deal. He hunted the highland forests. But for the most part, he seemed to spend his time finding new ways to get into trouble. His hard-earned expertise with the longbow and as a tracker achieved no useful purpose. On the contrary, it merely served to aggravate his father, who had repeatedly but unsuccessfully attempted to interest his son and only heir in the problems of governing his kingdom. One day, Menyon would be a king. But Shay doubted that his light-hearted friend ever gave the possibility more than a passing thought. This was foolish, if somewhat expected. Menyon's mother had died several years ago, shortly after Shay had first visited the Highlands. Menyon's father was not an old man, but the death of a king did not always come with age, and many former rulers of Lee had died suddenly and unexpectedly. If something unforeseen should befall his father, Menyon would become king whether he was prepared or not. There would be some lessons learned then, Shay thought, and smiled in spite of himself. The Lee ancestral home was a wide, two-story stone building nestled peacefully amid a cluster of spreading hickories and small gardens. The grounds were screened away from the surrounding city by high shrubbery. A broad park lay directly across from a small walkway fronting the home, and as the Veilmen crossed wearily to the front gates, children splashed playfully through a small pond at the hub of the park's several paths. The day was still warm, and people hurried past the travelers on their way to meet friends or to reach their homes and families. In the west, the late afternoon sky was deepening into a soft, golden haze. The tall iron gates were ajar, and the Veilmen walked quickly toward the front door of the home, winding through the long stone walkway's high shrubbery and garden borders. They were still approaching the stone threshold at the front of the home when the heavy oak door opened from within, and there, unexpectedly, was Menyon Lee. Dressed in a multicolored cloak and vest of green and pale yellow, his lean, whip-like frame moved with the graceful ease of a cat. He was not a big man, though several inches taller than the Veilmen, but he was broad through the shoulders and his long arms gave him a rangy look. He was on his way down a side path, but when he caught sight of the two ragged, dusty figures approaching along the main walk, he stopped short. A moment later, his eyes went wide with surprise. "Shay," he exclaimed sharply. "What in the name of all... What happened to you?" He rushed over quickly to his friend and gripped the slim hand warmly. "Good to see you, Menyon," Shay said with a smile. The Highlander stepped back a pace, and his gray eyes studied them shrewdly. "Never expected that my letter would get results this quickly." He trailed off and studied the other's weary face. It hasn't. Has it? But don't tell me. I don't want to hear it. I'd rather assume, for the sake of our friendship, that you came just to visit me. And brought distrustful old Flick, too, I see. This is a surprise. He grinned quickly past Shay at the scowling Flick, who nodded curtly. This wasn't my idea, you may be sure. I wish that our friendship alone were the reason for this visit. Shay sighed heavily. I wish I didn't have to involve you in any of this, but I'm afraid that we're in serious trouble and you are the one person who might be able to help us. Menyon started to smile, then changed his mind quickly, as he caught the mood reflected in the other's drawn face, and nodded soberly. Nothing funny about this, is there? Well, a hot bath and some dinner are the first order of business. We can discuss what brought you here later. Come on in. My father's engaged on the border, but I'm at your disposal. Once inside, Menyon directed the servants to take charge of the Vale Men, and they were led off to a welcome bath and a change of clothes. An hour later, the three friends gathered in the great hall for a dinner that would ordinarily have fed twice their number, but on this night barely satisfied them. As they ate, Shay related to Menyon the strange tale behind their flight from Shady Vale. He described Flick's meeting with the mysterious wanderer Alanon and the involved story behind the Sword of Shannara. It was necessary, despite Alanon's order of secrecy, if he must ask Menyon's help. He told of the coming of Balinor with his terse warning, of their narrow escape from the black skull creature, and finally of their flight to the Highlands. Shay did all the talking. Flick was unwilling to enter into the conversation, resisting the temptation he felt to elaborate on his own part in the events of the past few weeks. He chose to keep quiet because he was determined not to trust Menyon. He was convinced that it would be better for the Vale Men if at least one of them kept his guard up and his mouth closed. Menyon Lee listened quietly to the long tale, evincing no visible surprise until the part about Shay's background, with which he appeared immeasurably pleased. His lean brown face remained for the most part an inscrutable mask, broken only by that perpetual half-smile and the small wrinkles at the corners of the sharp gray eyes. He recognized quickly enough why the Vale Men had come to him. They could never expect to make it from Lee through the lowlands of Cleet and from there through the Black Oaks without assistance from someone who knew the country. Someone they could trust. Correction, Menyon thought, smiling inwardly. Someone Shay could trust. He knew that Flick would never have agreed to come to Lee unless his brother had insisted. There had never been much of a friendship between Flick and himself. Still, they were both here, both willing to seek his help, whatever the reason, and he would never be able to refuse anything to Shay, even where there was risk to his own life. Shay finished his story and waited patiently for Menyon's response. The Highlander seemed lost in thought, his eyes fixed on the half-filled glass of wine at his elbow. When he spoke, his voice was distant. The Sword of Shannara? I haven't heard that story in years. Never really believed it was true. Now, out of complete obscurity, it reappears with my old friend Shay Ohmsford as the heir apparent. Or are you? His eyes snapped up suddenly. You could be a red herring, a decoy for these Northland creatures to chase and destroy. How can we be sure about Alanon? From the tale you've told me, he seems almost as dangerous as the things hunting you. Perhaps even one of them. Flick started noticeably at this suggestion, but Shay shook his head firmly. I can't bring myself to believe that. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe not, continued Menyon slowly, inwardly musing over the prospect. Could be I'm getting old and suspicious. Frankly, this whole story is pretty improbable. If it's true, you are fortunate to have gotten this far on your own. There are a great many tales of the Northland, of the evil that dwells in the wilderness above the Strelaheim Plains. Power, they say, beyond the understanding of any mortal being. He trailed off for a moment, then sipped gingerly at his wine. The Sword of Shannara. Just the possibility that the legend might be true is enough to... He shook his head and grinned openly. How can I deny myself the chance to find out? You'll need a guide to get you to the NR, and I'm your man. I knew you would be. Shay reached over and gripped his hand in thanks. Flick groaned softly, but managed a feeble smile. Now then, let's see where we stand. Menyon took charge quickly, and Flick went back to drinking wine. What about these elf stones? Let's have a look at them. Shay quickly produced the small leather pouch and emptied the contents into his open palm. The three stones sparkled brightly in the torchlight, their blue glow deep and rich. Menyon touched one gently and then picked it up. They are indeed beautiful, he acknowledged approvingly. I don't know when I've seen their like. But how can they help us? I don't know that yet, admitted the Veilman reluctantly. I only know what Alanon told us, that the stones were only to be used in emergencies, and that they were very powerful. Well, I hope that he was right, snorted the other. I would hate to discover the hard way that he was mistaken. But I suppose we'll have to live with that possibility. He paused for a moment and watched as Shay placed the stones back in the pouch and tucked the leather container into his tunic front. When the Veilman looked up again, he was staring blankly into his wine glass. I do know something of the man called Balinor Shay. He is a fine soldier. I doubt we could find his equal in the whole of the Southland. We might be better off to seek the aid of his father. You would be better protected by the soldiers of Callahorn than by the forest-dwelling dwarfs of the Anar. I know the roads to Tirsis, all of them safe. But almost any path to the Anar will run directly through the Black Oaks. Not the safest place in the Southland, as you know. Alanon told us to go to the Anar, persisted Shay. He must have had a reason, and until I find him again, I'm not taking any chances. Besides, Balinor himself advised us to follow his instructions. Menyon shrugged. That's unfortunate, because even if we manage to get through the Black Oaks, I really don't know much about the land beyond. I'm told that it's relatively unsettled country all the way to the Anar forests. The inhabitants are mostly Southlanders and dwarfs, who should not prove dangerous to us. Cullhaven is a small dwarf village on the Silver River in the lower Anar. I don't think we'll have much trouble finding it, if we get that far. First, we have to navigate the lowlands of Cleet, which will be especially bad with the spring thaws, and then the Black Oaks. That will be the most dangerous part of the trip. Can't we find a way around? Shay asked hopefully. Menyon poured himself another glass of wine and passed the decanter to Flick, who accepted it without blinking. It would take weeks. North of Lee is the Rainbow Lake. If we go that way, we have to circle the entire lake to the north through the Rune Mountains. The Black Oaks stretch south from the lake for 100 miles. If we try to go south and come north again on the other side, it will take us at least 2 weeks. And that's open country all the way. No cover at all. We have to go east through the lowlands, then cut through the oaks. Flick frowned, recalling how on their last visit to Lee, Menyon had succeeded in losing them for several days in the dreaded forest, where they were menaced by wolves and ravaged by hunger. They had barely escaped with their lives. Old Flick remembers the Black Oaks, laughed Menyon as he caught the other's dark expression. Well, Flick, this time we shall be better prepared. It's treacherous country, but no one knows it better than I do, and we aren't likely to be followed there. Still, we'll tell no one where we're going. Simply say that we are off for an extended hunting trip. My father has his own problems anyway. He won't even miss me. He's used to having me gone even for weeks at a time. He paused for a moment and looked to Shay to see if he had forgotten anything. The veilman grinned at the Highlander's undisguised enthusiasm.
Menyon, I knew we could count on you. It will be good to have you along.
Flick looked openly disgusted, and Menyon, catching the look, could not allow the opportunity for a little fun at the other's expense to pass. "I think we ought to talk for a minute about what's in this for me," he declared suddenly. "I mean, what do I get out of all this if I do guide you safely to Cullhaven?"
"What do you get?" exclaimed Flick, without thinking. "Why should you—"
"That's all right," the other interrupted quickly. "I had forgotten you, old Flick, but you don't need to worry. I don't intend to take anything from your share."
"What are you talking about, sly one?" raged Flick. "I did not mean ever to take anything."
"That's enough." Shay leaned forward, his face flushed. "This cannot continue if we are to travel together. Menyon, you must cease your attempts to bait my brother into anger. And you, Flick, must put aside once and for all your pointless suspicions of Menyon. We must have some faith in one another, and we must be friends."
Menyon looked down sheepishly, and Flick was biting his lip in disgust. Shay sat back quietly as the anger drained out of him.
"Well spoken," acknowledged Menyon after a moment. "Flick, here is my hand on it. Let us make a temporary truce, at least, for Shay."
Flick looked at the extended hand, and then slowly accepted it.
"Words come easily for you, Menyon. I hope you mean them this time."
The Highlander accepted the rebuke with a smile.
"A truce, Flick."
He released the veilman's hand and drained his wine glass. He knew he had convinced Flick of nothing. It was growing late now, and all three were eager to complete their plans and retire for the night. They quickly decided that they would leave early the following morning. Menyon arranged to have them outfitted with light camping gear, including backpacks, hunting cloaks, provisions, and weapons. He produced a map of the country east of Lee, but it was poorly detailed because the lands were so little known. The lowlands of Cleet, which spread from the highlands eastward to the Black Oaks, was a dismal, treacherous moor. Yet on the map it was no more than a blank white area with the name written in. The Black Oaks stood out prominently, a dense mass of forest land running from the Rainbow Lake southward, standing like a great wall between Lee and the Anar. Menyon discussed briefly with the Veilmen his knowledge of the terrain and weather conditions at this time of the year. But like the map, his information was sketchy. Most of what the travelers would find could not be accurately anticipated, and the unexpected could be most dangerous. By midnight, the three were in bed, their preparations for the journey to the Anar complete. In the room he was sharing with Flick, Shay lay back wearily in the softness of the bedding and studied for a moment the darkness beyond his open window. The night had clouded over, the sky a mass of heavy, rolling blackness that settled ominously about the misty highlands. Gone was the heat of the day, blown east by the cooling night breezes, and throughout the sleeping city there was a peaceful solitude. In the bed next to him, Flick was already asleep, his breathing heavy and regular. Shay watched him thoughtfully. His own head was heavy and his body weary from the struggle to reach Lee, yet he remained awake. He was beginning to realize for the first time the truth about his predicament. The flight to reach Menyon was only the first step in a journey that might very possibly go on for years. Even if they managed to reach the Anar safely, Shane knew that eventually they would be forced to run again. The search to find them would continue until the Warlock Lord was destroyed, or Shay was dead. Until then, there would be no going back to the Vale, to the home and father he had left, and wherever they were, their safety would last only until the Winged Hunters found them once again. The truth was terrifying. In the silent darkness, Shay Olmsford was alone with his fear, and deep within himself, he fought back against a rising knot of terror. He took a long time, finally, to fall asleep. It was a dull, sunless day that followed, a day damp and chilling to human flesh and bone. Shay and his two companions found it devoid of any warmth and comfort as they journeyed eastward through the misty highlands of Lee and began a slow descent toward the cheerless climate of the lowlands beyond. There was no talking among them as they hiked in single file down the narrow footpaths which wound tediously about gray, hulking boulders and clumps of dying, formless brush. Menyon led, his keen eyes carefully picking out the often obscure traces of a trail, his stride long and relaxed as he moved almost gracefully over the gradually roughening terrain. Across his lean back he carried a small pack to which he had attached a great ash bow and arrows. In addition, beneath the pack and fastened to his body by a long leather strap was the ancient sword which his father had given him when he had reached the age of manhood, the sword which was the birthright of the Prince of Lee. Its cold, gray iron glimmered faintly in the dim light, and Shay, who followed several places back, found himself wondering if it was at all like the fabled sword of Shannara. His elven eyebrows lifted quizzically as he tried to peer into the endless gloom of the land ahead. Nothing seemed alive. It was a dead land for dead things, and the living were trespassers here. Not a very stimulating idea. He grinned faintly to himself as he forced his mind to turn to other matters. Flick brought up the rear, his sturdy back bearing the bulk of the provisions that would have to sustain them until they were through the lowlands of Cleet and the forbidding black oaks. Once they had gotten that far, if they got that far, they would be forced to buy or trade for food from the few scattered inhabitants of the country beyond, or as a last resort seek nourishment from the land itself, a prospect that Flick did not particularly relish. Although he felt somewhat more secure in his mind now that Menyon was genuinely interested in helping them on this journey, he was nevertheless still unconvinced of the Highlanders' ability to do so. The events of their last trip were still fresh in his mind, and he wanted no part of another hair-raising experience like that one. The first day wore on quickly as the three traveled past the boundaries of the Kingdom of Lee, and by nightfall had reached the fringes of the dismal lowlands of Cleet. They found shelter for the night in a small vale under the negligible protection of a few scruffy trees and some heavy brush. The dampness of the mist had soaked their clothing completely through, and the chill of the descending night left them shivering with cold. A brief attempt was made to start a fire in an effort to gain some small warmth and dryness, but the wood in the area was so thoroughly saturated with moisture that it was impossible to get it to burn. Eventually they gave up on the fire and settled for some cold rations while wrapped in blankets, which had carefully been waterproofed at the start of the journey. Little was said, because no one felt much like talking beyond mumbling curses upon the general weather conditions. There was no sound from the darkness beyond where they sat huddled within the brush. It was a penetrating stillness that prodded the mind with sudden, unexpected apprehension, forcing it to listen in a frightened effort to catch some faint, reassuring rustle of life. But there was only the silence and the blackness, and not even the wisp of a brief wind touched their chilled faces as they lay quietly in the blankets. Eventually the weariness of the day's march stole over them, and one by one they dropped uneasily off to sleep. The second and third day were unimaginably worse than the first. It rained the entire time, a slow, chilling drizzle that soaked first the clothing, then penetrated into the skin and bone, and finally reached the very nerve centers, so that the only feeling the weary body would permit was one of thorough, discomforting wetness. The air was damp and cold in the day, dropping off to a near freeze at night. Everything around the three travelers seemed totally beaten down by this lingering coldness. What little brush and small foliage could be seen was twisted and dying, formless clumps of wood and withered leaves that silently waited to crumble and disappear altogether. No human or animal lived here. Even the smallest rodent would have been swallowed up and consumed by the clutching softness of an earth seeped through with the chilling dampness of long, sunless, lifeless days and nights. Nothing moved. Nothing stirred as the three walked eastward through shapeless country where there was no trail, no hint that anyone or anything had ever passed that way before, or would ever do so again. The sun never appeared during their march, no faint trace of its direct rays flickering downward to show that somewhere beyond this dead, forgotten land was a world of life. Whether it was the perpetual mist or the heavy clouds or a combination of both that so completely blotted out the sky remained an unanswered question. Their only world was that cheerless, hateful gray land through which they walked. By the fourth day, they began to despair. Even though there had been no further sign of the winged hunters of the warlock lord, and it appeared that any pursuit had been abandoned, the possibility offered little solace as the hours dragged by, and the silence grew deeper, the land more sullen. Even Menyon's great spirit began to waver, and doubt wormed its stealthy way into his usually confident mind. He began to wonder if they had lost the direction, if perhaps they had even traveled in a circle. He knew the land would never tell them that once lost in this bleak country, they were lost forever. Shay and Flick felt the fear even more deeply. They knew nothing of the lowlands and lacked the hunter's skill and instinct that Menyon possessed. They relied completely on him, but sensed that something was wrong, even though the Highlander had purposely kept silent about his own doubts so as not to worry them. The hours passed, and the cold and the wet and the hateful deadness of the land remained unchanged. They felt their last shred of confidence in one another and in themselves begin to slip slowly, agonizingly away. Finally, as the fifth day of the journey drew to a close, and still the lowland bleakness stretched on with no visible sign of the desperately sought-after black oaks, Shay wearily called a halt to the endless march and dropped heavily to the ground, his questioning eyes on the Prince of Lee. Menyon shrugged and looked absently at the misty lowlands about them, his handsome face drawn with the chill of the air.
"I won't lie to you," he murmured. "I can't be sure that we have kept our sense of direction. We may have traveled in a circle. We may even be hopelessly lost."
Flick dropped his pack disgustedly and looked at his brother with his own special I-told-you-so look. Shay glanced at him and turned hurriedly back to Menyon.
"I can't believe we are completely lost. Isn't there any way we can get our bearings?"
"I'm open to suggestions."
His friend smiled humorlessly, stretching as he too dropped his pack to the rough ground and sat down beside the brooding Flick.
"What's the trouble, old Flick? Have I gotten you into it again?"
Flick glanced over at him angrily, but looking into the gray eyes, he quickly reconsidered his dislike of the man. There was genuine concern there, and even a trace of sadness at the thought that he had failed them. With rare affection, Flick reached over and placed a comforting hand on the other's shoulder, nodding silently. Suddenly, Shay leaped up and flung off his own pack, hastily rummaging through its contents.
"The stones can help us," he cried.
For a moment, the other two looked blankly at him, and then in sudden understanding rose expectantly to their feet. A moment later, Shay produced the small leather pouch with its precious contents. They all stared at the worn container in mute anticipation that the elf stones would at last prove their value, that they would somehow aid them in escaping the wasteland of Cleet. Eagerly, Shay opened the drawstrings and carefully dropped the three small blue stones into his upturned palm. They lay there twinkling dimly as the three watched and waited.
"Hold them up, Shay," urged Menyon after a moment. "Perhaps they need the light."
The Veilman did as he was told, watching the blue stones anxiously. Nothing happened. He waited a moment longer before lowering his hand. Al-Anon had cautioned him against use of the elf stones except in the gravest of emergencies. Perhaps the stones would only come to his aid in special situations. He began to despair. Whatever the case, he was faced with the hard fact that he had no idea how the stones were to be used. He looked desperately at his friends.
"Well, try something else," exclaimed Menyon heatedly.
Shay took the stones between his hands and rubbed them together sharply, then shook them and cast them like dice. Still, nothing happened. Slowly he retrieved them from the damp earth and carefully wiped them clean. Their deep blue color seemed to draw him to them, and he peered closely into their clear, glass-like core, as if somehow the answer might be found there.
"Maybe you should talk to them or something."
Flick's voice trailed off hopefully. A mental picture of Al-Anon's dark face, bowed and locked in deep concentration, flashed sharply in Shay's mind. Perhaps the secret of the elf stones could be unlocked in a different way, he thought suddenly. Holding them out in his open palm, the little Veilman closed his eyes and concentrated his thoughts on reaching into the deep blueness, searching for the power that they so desperately needed. Silently, he urged the elf stones to help them. Long moments passed, seemingly hours. He opened his eyes and the three friends watched and waited while the stones rested in Shay's palm, their blue gleam dull in the darkness and damp of the mist. Then, with ferocious suddenness, they flared up in a blinding blue glare that caused the travelers to reel back from the brightness, shielding their unprotected eyes. So powerful was the aura that Shay nearly dropped the small gems in astonishment. The sharp glow became steadily brighter, lighting up the dead land about them as the sun had never been able to do. The brightness intensified from the deep blue to a bright blue so dazzling that the awestruck watchers were actually hypnotized. It grew, steadied, and abruptly shot forward like a huge beacon, traveling to their left, cutting effortlessly through the mist-covered grayness to rest at last, some hundreds, perhaps thousands of yards ahead upon the great gnarled boles of the ancient black oaks. The light held for one brief moment, and then it was gone. The gray mist returned with its chill dampness, and the three small blue stones gleamed quietly as they had before. Menyon recovered quickly, clapping Shay sharply on the back and grinning broadly. In one quick motion, he had his pack back in place and was ready to travel, his eyes already scanning the now invisible spot through which the vision of the black oaks had appeared. Shay hastily returned the elf stones to the pouch, and the Veilmen strapped on their packs. Not a word was spoken as they walked rapidly in the direction the beacon had flashed, each watching eagerly for the long-expected forest. Gone was the chill of the gray darkness and slow drizzle of the past 5 days. Gone was the despair they had felt so strongly only minutes before. There was only the conviction that escape from these dreaded lowlands was at last at hand. They did not question, did not doubt the vision the stones had revealed to them. The Black Oaks was the most dangerous forest in the Southland, but at this particular moment,
It seemed a haven of hope compared to the land of Cleet.
The time seemed endless as they pushed ahead. It could have been hours or perhaps only minutes later when suddenly the graying mist grudgingly gave way to huge moss-covered trunks which rose hulkingly into the air to be lost in the haze above. The exhausted trio halted together, their tired eyes gazing joyfully on the cheerless monsters that stood evenly, endlessly before them, their great mass an impenetrable wall of damp, scarred bark on wide, deep-rooted bases that had stood there for countless ages of man, and would very likely be there until the destruction of the land itself. It was an awesome sight, even in the dim light of the misty lowlands, and the watchers felt the undeniable presence of a life force in those woods so incredibly ancient that it almost commanded a deep, grudging respect for its years. It was as if they had stepped into another age, another world, and all that stood so silently before them had the magic of an enticingly dangerous fairy tale.
"The stones were right," murmured Shay softly, a slow smile spreading over his tired but happy face.
He breathed deeply with relief and flashed a quick grin.
"The black oaks," pronounced Menyon in admiration.
"Here we go again," sighed Flick.
Chapter 6 They spent that night camped within the protective fringes of the black oaks in a small clearing, sheltered by the great trees and dense shrubbery which blotted out the dreariness of the lowlands of Cleet less than 50 yards to the west. The heavy mist dissipated within the forest, and it was possible to look skyward to the magnificent canopy of interlocking boughs and leaves several hundred feet above them. Where there had been no sign of life in the deathly lowlands, within the giant oaks the mingled sounds of insect and animal life whispered through the night. It was pleasant to hear living things again, and the three weary travelers felt at ease for the first time in days. But lingering in the back of their minds was the memory of their prior journey to this deceptively peaceful haven, when they had been lost for several long days and nearly devoured by the ravenous wolves that prowled deep within its confines. Moreover, the tales of unfortunate travelers who had attempted to pass through this same forest were too numerous to be disregarded. However, the young Southlanders felt reasonably secure at the edge of the Black Oaks and gratefully made preparations to start a fire. Wood was plentiful and dry. They stripped to the skin and hung their soggy garments on a line near the small blaze. A meal was quickly prepared, the first hot one in 5 days and devoured in minutes. The floor of the forest was soft and smooth, a comfortable bed compared to the dampened earth of the lowlands. As they lay quietly on their backs, gazing skyward at the gently swaying treetops, the bright light of the fire seemed to shoot upward in faint streaks of orange that gave the impression of an altar burning in some great sanctuary. The light danced and glittered against the rough bark and the soft green moss that clung in dark patches to the massive trees. The forest insects maintained their steady hum in contentment. Occasionally one would fly into the flames of the fire and extinguish its brief life with a dazzling flash. Once or twice they heard the rustle of some small animal outside the light of the fire, watching from the protective blackness. After a while, Menyon rolled over on his side and looked curiously at Shay.
"What is the source of the power of those stones, Shay? Can they grant any wish?"
"I'm still not sure."
His voice trailed off and he shook his head vaguely. Shay continued to lie motionless on his back, staring upward for a few moments as he thought back on the events of that afternoon. He realized that none of them had spoken of the elf stones since the mysterious vision of the black oaks in that awesome display of incomprehensible power. He glanced over at Flick, who was watching him closely.
I don't think that I have that much control over them, he announced abruptly. It was almost as if they made the decision. He paused and then added absently, I don't think I can control them.
Menyon nodded thoughtfully and lay back again. Flick cleared his throat.
What's the difference? They got us out of that dismal swamp, didn't they?
Menyon glanced sharply at Flick and shrugged.
It might be helpful to know when we can count on that kind of support, don't you think?
He breathed deeply and clasped his hands behind his head, his keen gaze shifting to the fire at his feet. Flick stirred uneasily across from him, glancing from Menyon to his brother and back again. Shay said nothing, his gaze focused on some imaginary point overhead. Long moments passed before the Highlander spoke again.
Well, at least we've made it this far, he declared cheerfully. Now for the next leg of the trip. He sat up and began to sketch a quick map of the area in the dry earth. Shay and Flick sat up with him and watched quietly.
Here we are, Menyon pointed to a spot on the dirt map representing the fringe of the Black Oaks.
At least that's where I think we are, he added quickly. To the north is the Mist Marsh, and farther north of that, the Rainbow Lake, out of which runs the Silver River east to the Anar Forests. Our best bet is to travel north tomorrow until we reach the edge of the Mist Marsh. Then we'll skirt the edge of the swamp. He traced a long line. And come out on the other side of the Black Oaks. From there we can travel due north until we run into the Silver River, and that should get us safely to the Anar.
He paused and looked over at the other two. Neither seemed to be happy with the plan.
What's the matter? He asked in bewilderment. The plan is designed to get us past the Black Oaks without forcing us to go directly through them, which was the cause of all the trouble the last time we were here. Don't forget those wolves are still in there somewhere.
Shane nodded slowly and frowned.
It's not the general plan, he began hesitantly. But we've heard tales of the Mist Marsh.
Menyon clapped his hand to his forehead in amazement.
Oh, no. Not the old wives' tale about a mist wraith that lurks on the edges of the marsh, waiting to devour stray travelers. Don't tell me you believe that. That's fine. Coming from you, Flick blazed up angrily. I suppose you've forgotten who it was that told us how safe the Black Oaks were just before that last trip.
All right, soothed the lean hunter. I'm not saying that this is a safe part of the country, and that some very strange creatures don't inhabit these woods. But no one has ever seen this so-called creature of the marsh, and we have seen the wolves. Which do you choose?
I suppose that your plan is the best one, interjected Shay hastily. But I would prefer it if we could cut as far east as possible while traveling through the forest to avoid as much of the Mist Marsh as possible.
Agreed.
Agreed, exclaimed Menyon. But it may prove to be a bit difficult when we haven't seen the sun in 3 days and can't really be sure which way is east.
Climb a tree, Flick suggested casually.
Climb a... stuttered the other in unabashed amazement. Why, of course. Why didn't I think of that? I'll just climb 200 feet of slick, damp, moss-covered tree bark with my bare hands and feet.
He shook his head in mock wonderment.
Sometimes you appall me.
He glanced wearily over at Shay for understanding, but the Veilman had bounded excitedly to his brother's side.
You brought the climbing equipment? He demanded in astonishment.
When the other nodded, he clapped him hardly on his broad back.
Special boots and gloves and rope, he explained quickly to a bewildered Prince of Lee. Flick is the best climber in the Vale, and if anyone can make it up one of these monsters, he can.
Menyon shook his head uncomprehendingly.
The boots and gloves are coated with special substance just before use that makes the surface rough enough to grip even, damp, mossy bark. He'll be able to climb one of these oaks tomorrow and check the position of the sun.
Flick grinned smugly and nodded.
Yes, indeed. Wonder of wonders.
Menyon shook his head and looked over at the stocky veilman. Even the slow-witted are starting to think.
My friends, we may make it yet.
When they awoke the following morning, the forest was still dark, with only faint traces of daylight filtering through at the tops of the great oaks. A thin mist had drifted in off the lowlands, which, when glimpsed from the edges of the forest, appeared as sunless and dismal as ever. It was cold in the woods. Not the damp, penetrating chill of the lowland country, but rather the brisk, crisp cool of a forest's early morn. They ate a quick breakfast, and then Flick prepared to climb one of the towering oaks. He pulled on the heavy, flexible boots and gloves, which Shay then coated with a thick, pasty substance from a small container. Menyon looked on quizzically, but his curiosity changed to astonishment as the stocky veilman grasped the base of the great tree, and with a dexterity that belied both his bulky size and the difficulty of the task, proceeded to climb rapidly toward the summit. His strong limbs carried him upward through the tangle of heavy branches, and the climbing became slower and more difficult. He was briefly lost from sight upon reaching the topmost branches, then reappeared, hastening down the smooth trunk to rejoin his friends. Quickly the climbing gear was packed, and the group proceeded in a northeasterly direction. Based on Flick's report of the sun's present position, their chosen route should bring them out at a point along the east edge of the mist marsh. Menyon believed that the forest trek could be completed in one day. It was now early morning, and they were determined to be through the black oaks before darkness fell. So they marched steadily, at times rapidly, in single file. The keen-eyed Menyon led, picking out the best path, relying heavily on his sense of direction in the semi-darkness. Shay followed close behind him, and Flick brought up the rear, glancing occasionally over his shoulder into the still forests. They stopped only three times to rest and once more for a brief lunch, each time quickly resuming their march. They spoke infrequently, but the talk was light-hearted and cheerful. The day wore quickly away, and soon the first signs of nightfall were visible. Still, the forest stretched on before them with no indication of a break in the great trees. Worse than this, a heavy, graying mistiness was once again seeping into view in gradually thickening amounts. But this was a new kind of mist. It lacked the inconsistency of the lowland mist. This was an almost smoke-like substance that one could actually feel clinging to the body and clothes, gripping in its own peculiarly distasteful fashion. It felt strangely like the clutching of hundreds of small, clammy, chilled hands seeking to pull the body down, and the three travelers felt an unmistakable revulsion at its insistent touch. Menyon indicated that the heavy, fog-like substance was from the mist marsh, and they were very close to the end of the forest. Eventually the mist grew so heavy that it was impossible for the three to see more than a few feet. Menyon slowed his pace to a crawl because of the increasingly poor visibility, and they remained close to each other to avoid separation. By this time the day was so far gone that even without the mist, the forest would have appeared almost black. But with the added dimness caused by the swirling wall of heavy moisture, it was nearly impossible to pick out any sort of path. It was almost as if the three were suspended in a limbo world, where only the solidity of the invisible ground on which they trod offered any evidence of reality. It finally became so difficult to see that Menyon instructed the other two to bind themselves together and to him by a length of rope to prevent separation. This was quickly done, and the slow march resumed.
Minion knew that they had to be very near the mist marsh and carefully peered into the grayness ahead in an effort to catch a glimpse of a breakthrough. Even so, when at last he did reach the edge of the marshland bordering the north fringes of the Black Oaks, he did not realize what had happened until he had already stepped knee-deep into the thick green waters. The chill, death-like clutching of the mud beneath, coupled with his surprise, caused him to slip farther down, and only his quick warning saved Shay and Flick from a similar fate. Responding to his cry, they hauled in on the rope that bound them together and hastily pulled their comrade from the bog and certain death. The sullen, slime-covered waters of the great swamp covered only thinly the bottomless mud beneath, which lacked the rapid suction of quicksand, but accomplished the same result in a slightly longer time span. Anything or anyone caught in its grip was doomed to a slow death by suffocation in an immeasurable abyss. For untold ages, its silent surface had fooled unwary creatures into attempting to cross, or to skirt, or perhaps only to test its mirrorless waters. And the decayed remains of all lay buried together somewhere beneath its placid face. The three travelers stood silently on its banks, looking at it and experiencing inwardly the horror of its dark secret. Even Menyon Lee shuddered as he remembered its brief, clutching invitation to him to share the fate of so many others. For one spellbound second, the dead paraded as shadows before them and were gone. "What happened?" exclaimed Shay suddenly, his voice breaking the silence with deafening sharpness. "We should have avoided this swamp." Minion looked upward and about for a few seconds and shook his head. "We've come out too far to the west. We'll have to follow the edge of the bog around to the east until we can break free from this mist and the Black Oaks." He paused and considered the time of day. "I'm not spending the night in this place," Flick declared vehemently, anticipating the other's query. "I'd rather walk all night and most of tomorrow, and probably the next day." Their quick decision was to continue along the edge of the mist marsh until they reached open land to the east, and then stop for the night. Shay was still concerned about being caught in open country by the skull-bearers, but his growing dread of the swamp overshadowed even this fear, and his foremost thought was to get as far away as possible. The trio tightened the rope about their waists and in single file began to move along the uneven shoreline of the marsh, their eyes glued to the faint path ahead. Minion guided them cautiously, avoiding the tangle of treacherous roots and weeds that grew in abundance along the swamp's edge, their twisted, knotted forms seemingly alive in the eerie half-light of the rolling gray mist. At times the ground became soft mud, dangerously like that of the marsh itself, and had to be skirted. At other times huge trees blocked the path, their great trunks leaning heavily toward the dull, lifeless surface of the swamp's waters, their branches drooping sadly, motionless as they waited for the death that lay only inches below. If the lowlands of Cleet had been a dying land, then this marsh was the death that waited. An infinite, ageless death that gave no sign, no warning, no movement as it crouched, concealed within the very land it had so brutally destroyed. The chilling dampness of the lowlands was here, but coupled with it was the unexplainable feeling that the heavy, stagnant slime of the swamp waters permeated the mist as well, clutching eagerly at the weary travelers. The mist about them swirled slowly, but there was no sign of wind, no sound of a breeze rustling the tall swamp grass or dying oaks. All was still, a silence of permanent death that knew well who was master. They had walked for perhaps an hour when Shay first sensed that something was wrong. There was no reason for the feeling. It stole over him gradually until every sense was keyed, trying to find where the trouble lay. Walking silently between the other two, he listened intently, peering first into the great oaks, then out over the swamp. Finally, he concluded with chilling certainty that they were not alone, that something else was out there in the invisible beyond, lost in the mist to their poor vision, but able to see them. For one brief moment, the young Veilman was so terrified by the thought that he was unable to speak or even to gesture. He could only walk ahead, his mind frozen, waiting for the unspeakable to happen. But then, with a supreme effort, he calmed his scattered thoughts and brought the other two men to an abrupt halt. Menyon looked around quizzically and started to speak, but Shay silenced him with a finger to his own lips and a gesture toward the swamp. Flick was already looking cautiously in that direction, his own sixth sense having warned him of his brother's fear. For long moments they stood motionless at the edge of the marsh, their eyes and ears concentrated on the impenetrable mist moving sluggishly above the surface of the dead water. The silence was oppressive. "I think you were mistaken," Menyon whispered finally as he relaxed his vigil. "Sometimes when you are this tired, it is easy to imagine things." Shay shook his head negatively and looked at Flick. "I don't know," the other conceded. "I thought I sensed something." "A mist wraith," chided Menyon, grinning. "Maybe you're right," Shay interceded quickly. "I am pretty tired and could imagine anything at this point. Let's keep moving and get out of this place." They hastily resumed the dreary trek, but for the next few minutes remained alert for anything unusual. When nothing happened, they began to let their thoughts drift to other matters. Shay had just succeeded in convincing himself that he had been mistaken and the victim of an overactive imagination brought about by lack of sleep, when Flick cried out. Immediately Shay felt the rope that bound them together jerk sharply and begin to drag him in the direction of the deadly swamp. He lost his balance and fell, unable to distinguish anything in the mist. For one fleeting moment he thought he glimpsed his brother's body suspended several feet in the air over the swamp, the rope still tied to his waist. In the next second, Shay felt the chill of the swamp grapple at his legs. They might have all been lost had it not been for the quick reflexes of the Prince of Lee. At the first sharp jerk of the rope, he had instinctively grasped at the only thing near enough to keep him on his feet. It was a huge, sinking oak, its trunk embedded so far into the soft ground that its upper branches were within reach, and Menyon rapidly hooked one arm about the nearest bough, and with the other grasped the rope about his waist and tried to pull back. Shay, now up to his knees in the swamp mud, felt the rope go taut on Menyon's end and tried to brace himself to aid. Flick was crying out sharply in the darkness above the swamp, and both Menyon and Shay shouted encouragement. Suddenly, the rope between Flick and Shay went slack, and out of the gray mistiness emerged the stout, struggling form of Flick Ohmsford, still suspended above the water's surface, his waist gripped by what appeared to be a sort of greenish, weed-coated tentacle. His right hand held the long, silver dagger, which gleamed menacingly as it slashed in repeated cuts at the thing which held him. Shay yanked hard on the rope which bound them, trying to aid his brother in breaking free, and a moment later he succeeded as the tentacle whipped back into the mist, releasing the still struggling Flick, who promptly fell into the marsh below. Shay had barely pulled his exhausted brother from the clutches of the swamp, freed him from the rope, and helped him to his feet before several more of the greenish arms shot out of the misty darkness. They knocked the shaken Flick sprawling, and one closed about the left arm of an astonished Shay before he could think to dodge. He felt himself drawn toward the swamp and drew his own dagger to strike fiercely at the slime-covered tentacle. As he fought, he caught sight of something huge out in the marsh, its bulk covered by the night and the swamp. To one side, Flick again became entangled in the grip of two more tentacles, and his stocky form was dragged relentlessly toward the water's edge. Valiantly, Shea broke free from the tentacle that held his arm, slashing through the repulsive limb with one great cut. Struggling to reach his brother, he felt another tentacle grasp his leg, knocking his feet out from under him. As he fell, his head struck an oak root, and he lost consciousness. Again they were saved by Menyon, his lithe form leaping out of the darkness behind, the great sword flashing dully in a wide arc as it severed in one powerful swing the tentacle which held the unconscious Shay. A second later the Highlander was at Flick's side, cutting and chopping his way past the arms which suddenly reached for him out of the darkness, and with a series of quick, well-placed blows freed the other Veilman. For a moment the tentacles disappeared back into the mist of the swamp, and Flick and Menyon hastened to pull the unconscious Shay back from the unprotected edge of the water. But before any of them could reach the safety of the great oaks, the greenish arms again shot out of the darkness. Without hesitation, Menyon and Flick placed themselves in front of their motionless friend and struck out at the encircling arms. The fight was silent, save for the labored breathing of the men as they struck again and again, chopping off bits and pieces and sometimes whole ends of the grasping tentacles. But any damage they caused did not seem to affect the monster in the swamp, which attacked with renewed fury at each stroke. Menyon cursed himself for not remembering to drag the great ash bow within reach so that he might have taken a shot at whatever it was that lay beyond the mist. "Shay," he yelled desperately. "Shay, wake up, or for the love of heaven, we're done for." The silent form behind him stirred slightly. "Get up, Shay," pleaded Flick hoarsely, his own arms exhausted from the great strain of fighting off the tentacles. "The stones," yelled Menyon. "Get the elf stones." Shay struggled to a kneeling position, but he was knocked flat again by the force of the battle in front of him. He heard Menyon shouting and dazedly felt for his pack, realizing almost immediately that he had dropped it while helping Flick. He saw it now, several yards to the right, the tentacles waving menacingly over it. Menyon seemed to realize this at the same moment and charged forward with a wild cry, his long sword cutting a path for the others. Flick was at his side, the small dagger still in his hand. With a final surge of his fading strength, Shay leaped to his feet and launched himself toward the pack containing the precious elf stones. His slim form slipped between several of the grasping arms, and he threw himself on the pack. His hand was inside, groping for the pouch, when the first tentacle reached his unprotected legs. Kicking and struggling, he fought to keep his freedom for the few seconds he needed to find the stones. For a moment he thought he had lost them again. Then his hand closed over the small pouch, and he yanked it from his fallen pack. A sudden blow from the writhing tentacles almost caused him to drop it, and he clutched it tightly to his chest as he loosened the drawstrings with numbing slowness. Flick had been forced back so far that he stumbled against Shay's outstretched body and fell over backward, the tentacles coming down on top of them both. Now only the lean form of Menyon stood between them and the giant attacker, both hands gripping tightly the great sword of Lee. Almost without realizing it, Shay found the three blue stones in his hand, free from the pouch at last. Scrambling backward, struggling to his feet, the young Veilman let out a wild cry of triumph and held forth the faintly glowing elf stones. The power locked within flared up immediately, flooding the darkness with dazzling blue light. Flick and Menyon leaped back, shielding their eyes from the glare. The tentacles drew back hesitantly, uncertainly, and as the three men risked a second quick glance, they saw the brilliant light of the elf stones streak outward into the mist above the swamp, cutting through its vapor with the keenness of a knife. They saw it strike with shattering impact the huge, unspeakable bulk that had attacked them as it was sinking sluggishly beneath the slime-covered waters. At that same instant, the glare above the disappearing monster reached the intensity of a small sun, and the water steamed with blue flames that seared upward into the shrouded sky. One moment, the burning glare and the flames were there, and the next, they were gone. The mist and the night returned, and the three companions were alone again in the blackness of the marshland. They quickly sheathed their weapons, picked up the fallen packs, and dropped back among the huge black oaks. The swamp remained as silent as it had been before the unexpected attack, its dull waters disturbingly placid beneath the gray haze. For several moments, no one spoke as they collapsed silently against the trunks of the great trees and breathed deeply, grateful to be alive. The whole battle had happened quickly, like the passing of a brief, horrible instant in an all-too-real nightmare. Flick was completely drenched by the swamp waters, and Shay was soaked from the waist down. Both shivered in the chill night air. After only a few seconds of rest, they began moving slowly about in an effort to ward off the numbing cold. Realizing that they had to get free of the marshland quickly, Menyon swung his tired body away from its resting place against the rough, bark-covered oak trunk and in one smooth motion swung his pack into place over his shoulders. Shay and Flick were quick to follow, though somewhat less eager. They conferred briefly to decide what direction it would be best to take now. The choice was simple. Proceed through the black oaks and risk becoming lost and being set upon by the wandering wolf packs, or follow the edge of the swamp and chance a second encounter with the mist wraith. Neither choice held much appeal, but the battle with the creature from the mist marsh was too recent to permit any of them to risk a repeat performance. So the decision was made to stick to the woods, to try to follow a course parallel to the shoreline of the swamp, and hopefully gain the open country beyond within a few hours. They now had reached the point where the long hours of traveling with the keen anticipation of danger had chipped and worn away the clear reasoning of the morning. They were tired and frightened by the strange world into which they had journeyed, and the one clear thought left in their numbed minds was to break through this stifling forest that they might find a few hours of welcome sleep. With that dominating their thoughts and overriding the caution that was so desperately needed, they forgot to tie themselves together again. The journey continued as before, with Menyon in the lead, Shay a few paces back, and Flick trailing, all walking silently and steadily, their minds fixed on the reassuring thought that ahead lay the sunlit, open grasslands that would take them to the Anar. The mist seemed to have dissipated slightly, and while Menyon's form was only a shadow, Shay could make him out well enough to follow. Yet at times both Shay and Flick would lose sight of the person immediately in front and would find their eyes straining wearily to keep to the path Menyon was making for them. The minutes passed with agonizing slowness, and the sharpness of each man's eyesight began to lessen with the increasing need for sleep. Minutes lengthened into long, endless hours, and still they plodded slowly onward through the misty haze of the great black oaks. They found it impossible to tell how far they had traveled or how much time had passed. Soon, it failed to matter at all. They became sleepwalkers in a world of half dreams and rambling thoughts with no break in the